Good morning. Saturday today, last day of November. And tomorrow will be the 1st of December. So yeah, it's our year in Zeshin, and so I've got one full day to go. So if you've just joined us, then still one full day to go. But if you've been here for the last few days, then you will be building up a certain amount of concentration or juriki, which we call kind of spiritual power. But really, it just means that your mind is kind of settling down a little bit. Just through that continual effort of returning to this present moment. And I'm also struck that we hear this word awakening a lot in Buddhism. And it's kind of an interesting term, because it always implies, you know, that the practice is about waking up. You know, that's why we come. We come to wake up. And so it kind of implies that we're asleep or dreaming or something like that, or not awake. And so when we're waking up from something to something, it's like a process. So, and if it's just like waking up, I mean, waking up is pretty easy. You know, the bell goes round in the morning, and then we wake up. And I guess I learned from many years of practice that resistance is futile. Is it Star Wars, or Star Trek? Is it the Klingons? Do they say that, or the Daleks? I don't know. Anyway, someone says resistance is futile, and in a Zen context, it is, because if you resist waking up when the bell goes, you suffer. I went through many years of that until finally I figured, okay, I'll just get up. And when the bell rings, I just like a dog and just kind of go along. And you let go of your own preferences, then your life becomes easier. Well, in a Zen context, it does. And you just kind of just do the next thing. And, so that's kind of waking up on that practical sense. And but you know, waking up is waking up from a dream, you know. And dreams are quite interesting, because dreams have a reality to them that when you're in them, I don't know if anybody's ever done liminal dreaming or lucid dreaming, then you know, there's a tangible, palpable reality to them. I have a dear friend back in the States, and she's just written a book about liminal dreaming, and a real practice about how to find that state between sleeping and waking, and to work within that, because it's quite a special, unusual space to be in. And yet we're not quite talking about that. We're talking about waking right up, like fully awake from this dream. And this dream for us is this dream of a life worth living. You know, a life that is better than this one, a life that is brighter, shinier, with more love and food and music. And this is it's a really nice life that we dream about, you know, and yet what we're confronted with is always something slightly different than that. And that's the basic, you know, Buddhism 101. So we practice waking up. It's that cry, wake up, wake up. And when you're asleep, when someone says wake up, normally you do wake up. And in our practice, you know, we get those constant reminders too. And the bird calls. There's, I don't know what's going on across the river. Sounds like some large machinery. And we get all those cries to wake up. And that's our challenge, is to recognize those calls. You know, it's like all the ingredients are here for this waking up. In fact, all the ingredients are this waking up. And in Sesshin, we're really encouraged to become very simple. Just to let go of that dream. And appreciate. My Zumi Roshi always used to say, appreciate your life. And appreciate your life is not so much like, oh, I've got a good life. I'm really appreciating my life. It's that appreciate your life as in like this experience. You know, so if you come to, to practice, to kind of add to your knowledge, you know, or understanding, or to get some perspective, or to gain peace, you know, this practice won't provide that, unfortunately. You know, it's not about adding to our cups, which are already full. You know, and it's really... It's quite deep, challenging work, because this waking up, you know, it's practice and realization. It's like we practice waking up, you know, and it's like I continually say, it's about letting go of thought, letting go of attachment to thought, letting go of that dream, and returning to this reality. You know, it takes commitment and effort. And at times we feel quite overwhelmed. You know, it's like it can be hard. I had a friend, Desmond, who's an Irish man that spent a number of years in Japanese monasteries, and say his teacher, Tangan Roshi, would be giving a Dharma talk. All the assembled monks, and they'd be sitting there. They sit very long periods in Japan, and they're all in great pain, so they're kind of on the edge of tears, and Tangan Roshi would kind of call out to them, great strength, you great bodhisattva warriors. And there's that real kind of brought them to tears, not just because their knees were hurting, but because that effort, that recognition of that the challenge that was being laid down, and also being taken up, you know, so it's no small thing, you know, that what we're engaged in here. You know, we can encounter boredom, restlessness, anger, frustration, and that's good. It's working. And we use that energy to reconnect with our practice. You know, it requires strength. And you know, struggle. I was talking about struggle, because struggle is really important as human beings. You know, my teacher Tenshin Roshi would always say that struggle is important. You know, which is not a great thing to hear when you're struggling. Struggle is important. It builds character. Well, I don't need that kind of character. Yeah, but I was talking to a teacher, a secondary school teacher, the other day, and she was, it's about one of my kids, you know. So, but me as a parent wanting to make it easy for my child to have a good life at school, and she took another perspective. She probably heard it all before, you know, bloody parents. And I guess she basically said, look, struggle is important. You know, she said, the content of the learning is one thing, and that's fine, and we'll work with that, but the greater lesson that's being learned here is how do I work in this situation? How do I deal with adversity? And that's a real lesson we learn in practice too. So if we get handed something on a plate and we don't value it or recognize it as the value that it has. You know, so when we wake up, you know, we're waking up to our birthright, you know, which again is this experience. You know, I can't make it any more simple, you know, this is what it is. You know, and it's not a Buddhist experience, it's not a Zen experience, it's not a Christian experience. It's not spiritual. You know, it doesn't have a name. And even though we present it in this kind of certain form of Zen here, you know, that's a container. It's a way to raise the value of it, but it's not it. I'd like to get a few words from Master Dogen around this. So this is a, and if you studied Zen, you would have know about Zen Master Dogen, and he's written a lot of simple and both complex fascicles, and this particular one is from his Shobo Genzo, his masterwork, called Guidelines for Studying the Way, Gakudo Yojin Shu. A lot of really practical instructions. He says, the practice throughout the way is to actualize the limitless realm of the Buddha way and to illuminate all aspects of the Buddha way, like this. The Buddha way is under everyone's heel, everyone's butt. Immersed in the way, clearly understand right on the spot. Immersed in enlightenment, like this, you yourself are complete. Therefore, even though you arrive at full understanding, still, this is only a part of enlightenment. This is how it is with practice throughout the way. Now, people nowadays who study the way do not understand where the way leads or ends. So they strongly desire to gain visible results. Who would not make this mistake? It is like someone who runs away from their father, leaving a treasure behind and wandering about. Though they are the only child of a wealthy family, they endlessly wander around as a menial in foreign lands. Those who study the way seek to be immersed in the way. That's that letting go of thought. For those who are immersed in the way, all traces of enlightenment perish. You know, why is that? It's just natural. Those who practice the Buddha way should first of all trust in the Buddha way. Those who trust in the Buddha way should trust that they are in essence within the Buddha way, where there is no delusion, no false thinking, no confusion, no increase or decrease, and no mistake, nowhere to go. To arouse such trust and illuminate the way in this manner and to practice accordingly are fundamental in studying the way. You do this by sitting, which severs the root of thinking and blocks access to the road of intellectual understanding. This is an excellent means to arouse true beginner's mind. Then you let your body and mind drop away and let go of delusion and enlightenment. And then generally speaking, those who trust that they are within the Buddha way are most rare. It's hard work in developing true trust. If you have correct trust that you are within the Buddha way, you understand where the great way leads or ends, and you know the original source of delusion and enlightenment. If once, in sitting, you sever the root of thinking, in 8 or 9 cases out of 10, you will immediately attain understanding of the way. What about the other 1 or 2? Bugger. Yeah. So, you know, and it is challenging. I know for in Sesshin, you know, stuff comes up for us, and you know, physically too, it's quite challenging. I remember my first Sesshin at Zen Mountain Monastery in New York, and afterwards it was just a, you know, weekend, three day retreat, basically 1 full day, I guess, and a half. And then Myotai, who was the head monk there at the time, she said, you know, she had this beatific smile on her face, you know, and then, wasn't that a wonderful Sesshin? I could have bitten her. Or is it, you know, when you're so kind of angry and frustrated and in pain, you just honestly, I know how dogs feel when they just want to bite. I said, no, I'm not coming back. And, yet, you know, something in that, you know, that challenge that's kind of been thrown down, that means that, and years of practice later, that I see that value. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know, you want to throw out difficulties just for the sake of difficulties, but, you know, they give you that opportunity to see where your edges are. And for me, that edge in beginning practice was an expectation that by doing X, I would get X. You know, I put in, you know, I'd count the number of sesshins I would have done. Okay, now after 10, I'll be there. After 20, imagine I would have done 100. Oh, unbelievable. And over time, you constantly put yourself back into this experience. Then you wear away some of those conceptions. Just one more word from Dogen Zenji. It talks about the different kinds of people who can practice too. He says, if anyone could enter the Buddha way by means of brilliance or broad knowledge, then the senior monk Shen Shui, who was a very bright monk, would have been the one. If anyone of ordinary appearance or humble position were excluded from the Buddha way, how could Hui Ning become the sixth ancestor? And he was an illiterate, illiterate woodcutter. He became one of the great teachers in our lineage. It is clear that the Buddha way's transmission lies outside brilliance and broad knowledge. Search and find out, reflect and practice. So being old or decrepit does not exclude you. That's good, because I'm getting old. Being quite young or in your prime does not exclude you. Although Zhao Zhou first studied when he was over 60, he became a man of excellence in the ancestral lineage. Jing's daughter had already studied long by the time she was 13, and she was outstanding in the monastery. The power of Buddha Dharma is revealed depending on whether or not there is effort, and is distinguished depending on whether or not it is practiced. So, you know, we all struggle, and, you know, we're in good company all down through the ages. There's even the story of Master Eka, who, you know, stood in front of Bodhidharma. And eventually, because Bodhidharma wouldn't talk to him, the snow rises higher and higher, and he's seeking the truth, and he eventually cuts off his arm and gives it to Bodhidharma. Radical, but, And he says, you know, show us your compassion and open the gate of the Dharma for all beings. You know, which I think is a wonderful mythic story about that, you know, it's not just for us either. So we're wanting to wake up not just for ourselves, but for all beings. You know, so my wish is that you really allow this incredible practice to grow in you. You know, it's something really rare. You know, that we develop faith and trust in ourselves. And this self, when you say, you know, myself, what is myself? You know, walls, light, incense smoke, trucks, dogs, planes, suffering, climate emergency. And it's not learning something new, you know, it's already here right now. And you don't need to wonder if you're heading in the right direction because it's immediate in front of you. You know, it's returning to your original face, mu, one hand. It's right here and it's always springing up. It's a Noetake River Valley. And it's in Wellington. And like I said, it's not confined to Zen, so you don't need to look for it in Zen. And just to finish up, I happened to pull James K. Baxter's Autumn Testament off the shelf before I left. And we've got a James K. Baxter scholar in the room. I won't interpret James K. Baxter, I'll just read him. And I think it's one of those things I kind of love to read other pieces of wisdom from people who've got absolutely nothing to do with your kind of spiritual background, and you hear the same thing, you know, being pointed out. So this is up the Whanganui River. At Jerusalem. So Wahingaro, which is the void out of which all things come, that's the Māori creation story. That is my point of beginning, that is where I find my peace. When prayers, thoughts, desires are bundled away in their necessary grave, it might seem that one has become an atheist, or in our terms, not a Buddhist. Trees are trees, hills are hills, people are people. There is no supernatural nimbus cloud to tell us that God is present within and with his creation. Yet it is precisely then that the right thought, the right response springs out of the void of the heart, and it is a prayer to clean a drain or swear at some good friend. And we do not create God by thinking about him. Yeah, some lovely words. So yeah, one full day left of Sesshin. So yeah, you use this time well. You know, come back to the simple basics of practice. And letting that thinking go. Whatever arises in front of you is directly your life.